This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Today I was going to chat with, there's a number of items I would be talking about, and one that I've been putting on the back burner and putting off. Because other things pop up, and I thought I'll start with sharing with you and ask your opinion of this. And if you have comment, feel free to call in and offer this. But it revolves around the Constitution and freedom and democracy at its basic level. And I'll start by just sharing with you that recently, we had the Blood Moon, and this is something that intensified, and I just thought, well, it's about time to broach the subject in a fashion that maybe it would trigger some honesty from the listeners and hear what you're thinking. But, you know, this practice we've come to call war on drugs, war on crime. And now I don't know if they're bold enough to call it the war on homelessness, but there's a trick there, and we must understand that police departments can be good, law enforcement is good, but sometimes if it has no checks, no balances, it can become bad. And in this state, especially in the city of Honolulu, what I have observed is that this war on homelessness, actually, the homeless should not be worried about what is really taking place, because they are in the direct sights of this and these acts by the mayor, by the chief of police, the legislators, the city councils who vote for these things. The homeless people are in a predicament or in a situation where they are already, their rights are pretty much compromising it at the hands of a guy like Caldwell, Carlisle, and those people. It's automatically your rights have diminished just because you are homeless. That's the nature of this group of people. But I believe that the people that really, really should be worried, the homeless should be worried. They have the rights. But we as people that who, quote, have homes should be worried. Because you take, for example, you go to any park now at after 10 o'clock, it's closed. This is an island state, surrounded by water. When I first arrived here, you could go to the beaches, and you could sit there all night, smell the salt air, see the moon rise, see the moon come down, set. You could see the stars. You could do everything. And just this last blood moon, I was the most viewing point that I felt was good to see it without any obstruction from the clouds was at Kahi Park. So you go to Kahi Park and you sit there, and 10 o'clock, here comes the police. Didn't matter if you belong there or not. And so I got to thinking, what is happening? They are policing you, me, and the homeless via this these policies to, quote, control the homeless sleeping on the beaches. Now, some of you say, well, it's unsightly to have the homeless there. But the real issue is, what is it doing? Are they using this law, these laws, to actually, with specific intent, to quietly diminish your civil rights of freedom to go and come, freedom of passage, to be able to... You work people, and they're stressed, and they can stay in their homes, or they can park along the streets. And I've seen now a number of the kids don't stop partying. They find themselves a street in an industrial park or a street in a community or cul-de-sac, and they still have their parties. So the partying isn't stopping, but the people that are being impacted are the homeless and adults like myself and you. I believe, just like the issue we're raising now where we say the police powers and we see the tanks and the military trucks and the quasi-military uniforms and these strategies, you have to fight force with force. And if you're going to immobilize something, you don't want to show up with a toothpick in hand and the violator or the perpetrator has a semi-automatic or an automatic rifle. That's logical. But there's something going on here that comes to mind, and I ask this question. Why would we be now, you know, we're worried about the police being paid and getting a good salary and bringing it. So to balance that, they work extra jobs, and they work special duty. But when it comes to our rights, we're being herded now and prevented. To go to a park as if we are adults and can't take care of ourselves, and the crime is so rampant that we as citizens, we as adults, can't go and participate. Now, you may not go out there, some of you, to really understand or appreciate what I'm saying, but it has gotten so bad just to access for fishermen. And we've talked about this briefly on air. Fishermen having access to the parks just to traverse them to go to the shoreline to fish. You can get sighted. If you go to relieve yourself in a bathroom in a city park and you have to go, gotta go, you can be ticketed if it's after 10 o'clock. So imagine it's, quote, to combat homeless people urinating on the streets, these new laws, but yet the laws are such that even if they had a chance and had a desire not to urinate or fecate on the sidewalks or in the bushes, they take upon themselves to go into the bathrooms, but they can't do that because of the police approach, because of the city council approach, because of the mayor's approach. Ban one, ban all. Is it resolving anything? I have to ask the question. If I can see five policemen, uniform officers, standing at a construction site during the daytime, when will they have time to do the patrol? So is this shutdown, wholesale shutdown of all the parks and city properties at night after 10, is it to combat crime? If so, then we should not allow any banks to be open and allow anybody to go into a bank during the daytime, because that's when banks are robbed. And why then won't we see a policeman standing there shutting down the bank? If it's based on fighting crime, now, I mean, I don't want to sit here and sound ridiculous, but there's something that our rights have been abridged, and they're gradually eroding away to the point you are in a police state. When you can't sit and watch a natural process such as the moon, a blood moon, a rare occasion, and you're being shooed away by a policeman who says, well, the law is the law. You see that sign? It says 10 o'clock. I mean, I didn't receive that, but I overheard the conversation. So there's something terribly wrong amidst going on that you and I, while, we knew these things when the Patriot Act was introduced. You may have heard me have some flippant remark that, well, you know, in the black community, we knew about the Patriot Act before they even considered such a thing, because they would, tap your phone, do a pin register on your phone, follow you, pull you over, investigate you, search you, do whatever. And once it starts to impact others, the more prominent people, then it becomes a problem. So I believe that there has been a purposeful and intentional approach using the homeless issue under the pretense that it's to control the homeless from gathering around the parks and whatever. And let's face it, yes, there were a great many of the people that gravitated to the parks and set up and were homeless, but are we to simply punish everyone with no exemptions, no exceptions, just the sign says 10 o'clock, get the hell out, for all people? Is that good policing, or is that good shepherding? Or what is it? So I'm terribly bothered by this practice to see it, and again, the war on anything seems to be problematic, and when it comes to government and the application, and when you see the police here, they have the freedom, and quite natural. We know that according to some studies, and the cost of living is high, and they do get underpaid. But why don't we seek more money from the city council and Romy Cocciola and others and fund the salaries, supplement the salaries of the police officers and allow them to actually patrol at nighttime, putting more people out in the field during the nighttime, patrolling the parks, and leave them open to people. Because something just, you don't shut down the entire world because some people come and sleep on the sidewalks in the parks or come and camp in the parks. You police them. And does that speak to the efficiency of the police department? So it may sound a bit brash and saying the things there, but I'm concerned that someone in this process, and that's what I meant by striking a balance with police and enforcement, because who's there if you have the mayor and the city council leading the charge up the hill? Imagine a police department willing to get, and we don't have to deal with these issues, so just tell the city council, just shut the whole park down. That's a good study. Just deprive all of the citizens of their rights. And I don't mean to separate homeless and the population from the people with homes. It's just that something smells about this process, and it has been known that when legislators and police chiefs and what have you, when they see the opportunity, they seize it to make things easier for themselves, but at the liberty and cost that it costs the free citizens. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
It's just a comment, Joe. I just wanted to comment on your topic here. I do agree with you that there should be some kind of conditions under which the public can remain in the park after hours. In fact, I just recently, just within the last minute, strolled by a park and saw the park closure sign indicating the 10 o'clock closing time. And it also says that unless authorized by permit, you know, you can probably stay after the closing time. So, you know, I'm just curious to know under what circumstances would the Parks Department consider a permit for people after hours? I mean, is this something that John Doe citizen can apply for, or is this something that only certain organizations, like people willing to pay the money for their permit, could get?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I agree that our public parks are public trust resources, and there should be some control to exercise over the parks so that they don't become lawless areas.
Right.
But I would agree with your point in that the public should have certain consideration to remain in a park after hours, providing that they're not causing any trouble,
mm-hmm.
providing that everything's on the up and up and lawful. Under what circumstances would you give me a permit if I were to conduct myself in that manner?
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of question I would have here, because I do agree with your point. It's kind of ridiculous if you're not doing anything wrong, if all you're doing is taking photos of the blood moon or fishing on the shoreline, that people would be herded out of the park at 10 o'clock. I don't really agree with that. I do mm-hmm. think there should be certain circumstances where people should be allowed to stay.
And we know that, and thank you, because that was one of the points I have not noted to mention. Even the process of getting a permit, as you pointed out, is not clear. There's no real open advertisement or to let you know what exemptions there might be. Because, you see, we got into a frenzy of passing the laws and controlling the homeless population, you see. And at the loss of that, or the negative part of that as well, I believe the whole process is wrong, it's flawed, how they're handling the homeless. But the side effects are worse than what they are attempting to accomplish. It's wrong in both ways to force upon people. You work all day. What about taking and being able to go to the beach and sit there? Are you saying just because it's dark, the average citizen will commit a crime?
Sure, and I think to your point, I understand that, you know, for the police and for enforcement folks, it's probably easier to do a broad stroke and just close it to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that when we examine this issue, could there be certain circumstances or consideration given to the public who are not causing any trouble, who are there in a very special and unique circumstance, such as the blood moon, to stay after hours? I think, you know, there's room for flexibility in this law,
mm-hmm.
and we do need to take a look at how we can allow the public greater access to a public trust resource that we pay for the maintenance and upkeep in our taxes. And that's all I got to say.
Right.
You have a great day, and I'll listen to you off air.
Thank you. You know, let's just say, how does one, and I guess it would, the teachers would know, or someone wanting to lead a hike or a tide pool or shoreline hike at nighttime to show students or a group what goes on, you know, in the life at night for various creatures in the ocean and what have you. These types of things, but to see more policemen standing on the streets during the daytime at special sites, I think it needs to be revisited. Give them adequate salary. Get them out there to patrol. Give them compensation for that. And then if you need a person at the street corner at a construction site, then hire security guards. Like, we hire them for anything and everything. Hire security guards and paid out of the contract to stand there and traffic train. I mean, these are not ignorant people, and most of this, a great many of the security guards are former military, policemen or retired, and they're smart. So they can be trained to steer traffic and protect us at these construction sites. But I think there is a little more sinister point there, in that it was to just wholesale blanket saying no to all citizens. That has to be called into question. There has to be a revisiting of this situation. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, just a quick comment regarding the last caller. He's asking you, we should do this. Why doesn't this it be done? You know, all the answers are in front of us. It's all controlled by the mayor and the city council. So you have to go talk to your city councilman, or you got to vote these guys out who are not doing their job. And you have to go to the hearings and the meetings and express your view.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, mayor, city council, rule the roost.
Right. You're right.
I have to say.
Thank you. And guys, you can take this conversation and fragment it and say that it is anti this. I'm sounding the alarm for you to say that everyone in the capacity of a leader, the chief of police, the police commission, the legislators, all of them. I mean, when you make these decisions, it's not how many crooks can you prevent from committing crimes in the dark of night. It's not just about how many homeless people you can keep off the beaches at night. You have to factor and give consideration to what abridgment or what degree of abridgment or where are we going to sacrifice our rights as free citizens to come and go as we please. These are public facilities. These are public parks. And what is, you know, if you work 8 to 5, you could run to the beach and you can stay out there for 5 hours with the family. But what is so wrong about? And then the other thing is, to add insult to injury and to make matters worse, the DLNR refuses and restricts the workers, the officers, from working at nighttime. And so, therefore, that becomes problematic. And they say, well, we don't have enough officers. Well, damn it, put them out there and patrol them. Create enforcement. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Thank you very much for taking my call, and thank you for your advocacy on the part of all of us. Your last caller mentioned going to the city council and voting, etc., and I understand all of that. and I advocate going to the city council, but let me explain. I've been there many, many times, and in my opinion, you're dealing with people that are unconscionable, incorrigible. They have a vested interest in whatever they're doing, whether it's for power, for money, for position, for status. Those are the people you're dealing with. And as long as you go and testify, and I've testified with 10, 12 wheelchair people and have gotten absolutely no satisfaction. So my comment is, yes, it's good to go to the city council, but make sure you realize that half circle in front of you are incorrigible, unconscionable people, and they're doing it for their own vested interests. And thank you very, very much for taking my call.
Thank you. So you take, for example, just that Kahi plant there. An officer pulled up, and the park was, all right, banging, you know, get out of here, get out of here, get out of here. Who owns this motorcycle here? Beautiful Harley Davidson. I mean, just absolutely beautiful bike. A couple of them was parked there. And I said to the officer, oh, the guys that are on those bikes, they're out, there are their lights, they're out snorkeling, and they were taking pictures or something, you know, doing some underwater photography and all. Well, I don't care. That's it. Grabbed his ticket book, Sidon, wrote him a ticket for parking. And so the officer is right. He's doing everything within the allowance of the law. But how did we get there? Who is fanning the flames? And that's the part I'm concerned about, is that every aggressive act by the police department that goes unchecked and is initiated to accomplish what the mayor wants, who has this feverish sickness or illness about against the homeless with this Hitler mentality. They're wrong, they're wrong, they're wrong, and keep singing that song, and none of us have the time to ask him, if the homeless are wrong for being here, how the hell are you not the leader, the manager of the city? Why can't you come up with solutions? You told us you can address that. You told us you could do it. But instead you take drastic measures. Now they're closing Fort DeRussy. You see how it's like an illness just creeping and creeping and creeping, going unchecked. The city council give the mayor what he wants because you can't stand and sleep on the sidewalk. How many hours have been spent on chasing the homeless? But in the process, how many measures have eroded your rights as citizens? We're all free citizens, the homeless and all, but there's a great danger to what's developing here, folks. But if you go to Waikiki, can you be on the beach after 10 o'clock in Waikiki? Do you know, Richard? But anyway, I if anybody knows, can you be on the beach at Waikiki? I know that at Ala Moana, you get chased out. At 10 o'clock, you're out. And they will hammer your ass, just give you a ticket, and you're done. And in fact, I've witnessed where they pull up, they don't want an explanation. They tell you right away, you broke the law, get out of here, but before you go, take this ticket. So, again, the war on anything is a war on everything, because it creeps into their minds, and once the mayor or the leader, he gets what he wants, and he gets a nod from the city council, and he gets a nod from the chief of police, and they send their legislative advisors in, and they consult, and I'm sorry. There's nothing more important and appreciated than a police. But when we see in a stealthy fashion our rights are eroded, or just forget the rights themselves, but just the nature of how things are evolving, it's problematic and troublesome for me as a person who believe in democracy and believe that, yes, there may come a time where certain areas are blighted with crime. For example, parks can serve in the dark of night as a chop shop. Parks can serve as a place for drug deals. But that's not the homeless. That's crime. That's what you're trying to fight in the daytime. That's what you're hurrying to run to the banks and park there, assign a truck at the each bank. When we have a bank robbery, at times they sign, their action is to put a policeman there in at the bank. So why not put a policeman in the parks and let people, by being there, visibility will discourage. But there's something wrong. Why not have a police, friends of the police or the beach, come up with something rather than taking these drastic measures? And the question I have is, where does it stop? And I'm sure there are many other instances, but in the danger with creating these, I don't even call them laws, I call it a feverish reaction to be unjust. And doing so, you're not going to think about the Constitution. You're not going to think about the rights. You're not going to think about the quality of life. You're not going to think about the impacts that you're presenting to the people, hardworking people, people that are out there. You're not going to take in that because the mayor, little Hitler, wants to have it his way because he's busy doing other things, you see. And so this comes with the price, folks, this chasing the, quote, homeless around. I think, again, I've said it before, I believe that there's something sinister, more sinister about it. And I think that they did, in fact, consider, but it's easier to control crime in their minds by not allowing these parks because it's such a vast area. And I would ask that, did they, in fact, come up with an idea or facts that proof that by shutting these parks down, you're reducing the amount of crime? Because the people that's stealing and killing and ripping people off, it's their industry anyway. They're going to find a way to do it, even during the daytime. So that's just some things that I have observed and have some concerns about, and we need to be vigilant about it, because if not, your rights can be taken away, and when you wake up, where did my rights go? Well, they went when you were reading every morning, you read about the homeless being kicked around, pushed around, and shoved around. There went your rights, too. So those of you that are out there cheering on the mayor and the city council and saying that's good and it makes Waikiki looks good, just go around the island and see those laws. And then they were able to put in there and says, we're going to expand it over the city. But these rules were already in place. 10 o'clock, you're out. So anyway, that was about that. What I wanted to talk about also is that a couple things. But recently, just doing a checking, there's a, I don't know how many of you have pets out there. And the, let's see here. If you've used a product Frontline, And I recall it being sold at Costco at one time, and I, in fact, purchased some. And in the process, I can't say what happened if it conclusively. But one of my dogs died, actually died, after applying this medication. I can't say there was a direct relationship, but this was a healthy dog. And so what I was able to obtain was a... there's a recent indictment in federal court of the United States of America. It's a 20-count indictment on actually 22. And the gentleman's name, the person that is indicted is David H. Payne. And there it was issued October 23rd, 2014. And I'll just read this for you. And I did speak with Mr. Peng. I invited him to come on. And quite naturally, when you have an indictment, and an indictment is, has nothing to do with guilt or innocence. It's a process of requiring you to come to court to answer. And so the grand jury indicted him. And the grand jury charged that legal background, I'm going to read this, under the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, that's called FIFRA, Title 7, U.S.C. 136, et sec., all pesticides must be registered with the United States Environmental Protection Agency before their distribution, sale, or use. 7 U.S.C. 1368A, The EPA is required to register a pesticide if it determines the pesticide's labeling and other materials comply with FIFRA requirements. And the pesticide, when used properly, will perform its intended purpose without unreasonable adverse effect on the environment. Registered pesticides are issued a product registration number preceded by the phrase EPA reg number, etc., and the pesticide producing establishment registration number. So there's two things required there. By phrase EPA EST number, and then 40 CFR Code of Federal Regulations 156.10E and F, all registered pesticides must have a label that bears both the product registration number and establishment registration number, as well as directions and warnings for the pesticide's safe use. The directions on the on a pesticide label set forth the enforceable requirements with which commercial pesticide applicators or other pesticide users must comply. On the FIFRA, the term pesticide is defined as including substance or mixture of substances intended for preventing, destroying, repelling, or mitigating any pest. That's under 7 U.S.C. 136. And I'm reading directly from this indictment. Distribution of the sale of any unregistered pesticide constitutes a FIFRA violation, 7 U.S.C. 136J, A1A. The term distribute or sell means to distribute, sell, offer for sale, hold for distribution, hold for sale, hold for shipment, or receive, and having so received, deliver or offer for delivery again. The product was frontline combo manufactured in France, cannot lawfully be imported into or distributed within the United States because it is not registered with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Frontline combo is a pesticide within the meaning of FIFRA, because it is a substance and mixture of substances, that is, fipronil and methoprene, also called S-methoprene, intended to prevent, destroy, repel, mitigate pests, that is, fleas, ticks, in dogs and cats. And the final statement was the defendant's knowledge. The defendant, David H. Peng, was familiar with FIFRA because of an earlier civil enforcement action brought by EPA against him and his company under FIFRA. I spoke to Mr. Chang, Mr. Peng, and he indicated that he did not, though he did give me a formal interview, he was concerned making comments, and you can understand that. But in our attempts to reach out to him, and was that he was, in fact, involved in an earlier case around 2004, and I'll read just a brief of that later, but he indicated that he was never really fined for that, but some workout, but seemed to be conflicting with what the documents we have. But again, as he pointed out, we have to be careful what we read on the Internet. And I take note of that, and I am very careful to stick to and adhere to the official documents. So if these documents are wrong, then the whole judicial system is flawed. But anyway, The defendant, David Payne, was familiar with the FIFRA because of an earlier civil enforcement action EPA brought against him and his company on the FIFRA, which resulted in him signing a consent agreement and final order paying a fine. The grand jury further charges, paragraph 1 through 6 of the introductory allegations, are incorporated herein by reference. On or about the following dates, within the District of Hawaii and elsewhere, the defendant, David H. Payne, fraudulently and knowingly imported and brought into the United States merchandise, namely parcels containing frontline combo pipettes, which were pesticides on the FIFRA, but which were not registered with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as required by FIFRA from the United States, and brought into the United States contrary to law, with each parcel identified further by its tracking number as set forth in the table below, being separate. So, give you an example. They're indicating that one count was that dates of importation, July 13th to the 16th, there were two such imports, and each one was 480 pipettes. And another one was 14th to the 16th, 720 pipettes. And just it goes on. And so, as all the way up to 22 to 25, 2013. And again, as I say, I spoke to Mr. Payne, and I, in fact, asked and invited him to call in. And, you know, that when the judicial system, you're involved, you have to exercise some caution. But again, there were other things that I wanted to question him and ask, because he indicated that his claim was that it was not related, and there's a docket FIFRA 9/2004 where the EPA had made a case, initial decision, introduction, the proceeding. And they actually, there's a company called Rising Sun in Chicago, and they indicated, just as an example, in addition, Rising Sun alleged that a Hawaiian corporation, Payne and Sons, which is now defunct and transferred to Global Sourcing LLC, this is obtained through the DCCA. So Mr. Payne indicated that he didn't know this company, Rising Sun, but the assertion in this formal document, the EPA says, Rising Sun asserted that all language and labeling were in English and understandable. Respondent noted that the metric system is a unit of measure and not a foreign language. In addition, Rising Sun alleged that a Hawaiian corporation, Payne and Sons, Inc., repackaged the materials according to respondent. Payne and Son was investigated by U.S. Customs and has agreed to pay a criminal penalty of $10,000 payable over 2 years. Now, again, Mr. Payne didn't call in. He didn't want to make a formal statement, but he did say that this was not true and denied that. And again, you got to be careful what you read on the Internet. But in this case, this is a formal document. It is actually Environmental Appeals Board for the EPA. So I just will go on what is presented with the facts in writing, and it was in EPA Region 9, and signed. This was dated, this document, and it's substantial. It's about 30 pages, dated 8th May 2007, and so Spencer T. Nissan was the administrator who signed this. And again, in all due respects to Mr. Payne, he indicated that this was not factual, it was not true, that he did not pay any fines that he, for what was charged, but some other penalties were assessed and some other charges. So to reduce the impact or the severity of the legal costs and what have you, he indicated or suggested that he pled out on some other issues or agreed to pay a fine or a penalty. That was his words. And again, keeping in mind, he indicated that the current indictment, grand jury indictment, those things too does not reflect the truth and accuracy. And quite naturally, He will have his day in court on that one. And the second one, the earlier one, where it was referenced, and this is a knowing violation, and meaning that the burden is on the government to establish that this party knew that it was wrong. So I guess they're referencing this earlier 2004. But the bottom line is, what does this all mean? I can't tell you that my dog died from it, and I can't tell you any of the details, but I'm just concerned, and I share that as a consumer alert for you. If you have used that product and you have experienced a problem and you heard the that I read there, you might want to ask, and it's called Frontline Combo. Now, in this, Mr. Payne, this is a little kind of a not off subject, but in the Googling of Mr. Payne, this matter, there was some person, and this brings me in, and I share his sentiments regardless of what. There's a document online called, it's a website called Ripoff. And I ripoffreport.com. And so looking at this, and I share you his story, and so it, on one hand, I'm looking to find out the history of this and understanding what was going on about this indictment and the earlier issues. And in doing so, I learned something interesting that was shared, and I share this with you, and I don't know how factual the representation was made by Mr. Payne in this. I wasn't paying to strict details, so I want to be careful, but in some sense, or just in gist of what was said, this Ripoff Report, so you type in his name, Mr. Payne, and boop, pops up is a statement that $37,757 U.S. dollars plus expenses was ripped off. It says here, 7/12/2011, my company entered into a legal binding contract with David Payne, Global Sourcing from Honolulu. Mr. Payne says had nothing to do with him, absolutely nothing. And interesting, this I don't see any specific contact number for the person that wrote this and submitted it on this report, but it's posted. And Mr. Payne says that he contacted the ripoffreport.com, asked to offer a rebuttal. He wrote a rebuttal and asked them to post it, where he denied and gave facts, he indicated. And quoting Mr. Payne, that he was told that he needed to pay $2,000 to get it posted up there. So how about that? What if that is true, and you are a company or an individual, and you get your name posted up with false statements or false allegations or what have you, and someone just posts that information up there and waves in the wind. Now, I'm not defending Payne. I don't know the details. There, you know, in some instances where he was, I'm reading from an official document, and he's saying, no, that's, you can't believe that document either. So, but I offered him to share with me that same statement, which he has no obligation to, and that it, I would post it on our website for free. At least he would get a portion of an opportunity to clear his name. But he was reluctant and did not accept the offer. But that, what if that is true, that you someone malign you, put that information out there, and it's not true, and you contact to ask it on the internet, and they ask, you ask to have it removed, and you're told to charge. What if that is true? Would you pay it? What if you couldn't pay it? How will that impact you? So in the process of seeking out one thing, this is just something that appeared on the horizon, and I'm thinking, wow. So again, I'm not offering that to defend or steer you or suggest to you that Mr. Payne is not providing the facts or the truth. I reluctantly talk about it, but again, it just helps bring a lot more to the surface on people, human nature, and the internet and what goes on. So. I don't know, if someone posts something up as a footnote, how much does it cost you to fight it? and to get it erased. So I'm going to actually send Ripoff Report.com a letter and ask them to provide me with a little history of what did transpire in this. But anyway, we're going to talk some more about a couple other things and in the next hour. 524-1080 is the number. But, you know, out there in Kahului Pond, the sewage, the fecal levels, Clostridium and Perfringens and all of those bacteria or coliforms are showing up 10 times higher than what it's described as what was dumped into Alawai Canal. So how can this happen? How can we have 20,000 gallons of sewage to spill within the sewage treatment plant and another 5,000 spill in the lagoon or the harbor, Honolulu Harbor, here recently, and the many other spills? How can all of that happen? Well, I have a basic idea of how it happens. You see, when you take and you vote for people and they promise you that they can do it, and you said, well, I can pick the lesser of the two evils and I'll just go ahead and vote them in. And in turn, you got the lesser of the two evils, but you also got a follower and who is just thankful to be in and just wants to get along because they couldn't get a job anywhere else. And so when you have a mayor leading the charge to clear the path of the homeless and to raise the taxes and get his rail in and be part of that PRP, be the beneficiary of the PRP gag, then there's a problem. So we're going to talk about that in my attempt or pursuit of the operator's license from the state health department, and we'll talk about that in the next hour. So we'll see you shortly. Aloha.
Take a smoke now. Everybody take a break. Just leave the piano myself up here. I'm going to play this by myself, just the piano and myself, just the way I feel. I know it sounds good to you, baby. Oh, yeah. As I play these blues, it makes me think about some of my used-to-be's. Fine girls in my life, some good, some bad. But I never will forget some of those girls that I met. I remember Alice, and that was Lucille, and that was Doretha. I can't forget Elsa. All those girls give me the blues. And then that was Nancy. Yeah. I can see them all sitting out there in the house tonight, you know. Sit there listening to me, baby. Yeah. Detroit gonna play the blues for you this morning. That's me, baby. Detroit, the Michigan kid. I'm gonna do this for myself right here. Listen.
Stay.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. The conversation is varied today. Anyway, I was in the last hour mentioned that I'd be talking about sewage and sewage. And just as I checked, someone emailed me, and thank you for responding. Just here's a cement operation, clearly, and these gentlemen are washing. This is a video taken, and she indicated this person that sent this indicated that she has filed a complaint with the city. But I would also file a complaint if you're listening, and I'll send you back an email. Contact the Clean Water Branch at 586-4309. And then if file a complaint with them as well. You have the information and apparently the truck that was doing it. And the men are washing down. You know the address and all. And so they'll be able to tell. So what it is that one of these concrete operators, they're actually at a storm drain and washing their truck out and running it down the drain. So thank you again for sending that. So anyway, let me share a little story with you. You know, the mayor, you have to ask yourself, why was the mayor rushing to the media in a delayed fashion about the Sand Island treatment plant? You see, I reported to you there are many problems out there, and he won't fix them, can't fix them, because he's overextended. And when you defer maintenance, you also sending that money somewhere else. And so when you got your train, and you're trying to get that, you know, and then you got your friends all on contracts, so you need some money. You need to move money around, right? The shell game. But what happens is that This sewage spill inside of the sewage treatment plant. I've gotten a complaint from some of the workers in there, and they indicated that things are really bad. And I've shared those comments and the information with the state health department. Again, it's kind of, and I'll offer this. It's what do they say? If a person continues to do the same thing and get the same results, he's nuts. Something to that effect. Well, I believe I have a mild sense of fruitcake-ness. And that I keep going back to the state health department with this. And they should be doing their job. They should be enforcing. They should be, when they do catch them, make examples to discourage the continued violation in that community or those people that might be encouraged. But when they don't, the state does not do its job or the city does not do its job, and they have a regulatory body too, wastewater branch and what have you in the city and the state. So when they don't do their job, that in itself is insulting. But making it worse is when I go out and find it, or you call me, or you contact the state, and the state still does nothing. So when we discuss this thing about coral, the degradation of the coral heads and the coral and the shoreline, coastlines, and whatever in the environment, could any or some of or all of this be influencing the condition of the water, the pH, and everything else, what we're dumping? Like you see these guys washing down the cement apparatus into the storm drain. Where is that going to go? That lime that's in there and the other constituents in there, is that good for the fish? Good? Is it good for the coral? Is it good for the larvae or the egg of the fish? So, but you wouldn't think of that if you're trying to get the homeless and corral them. You're busy being mean rather than busy doing what is needed for the people's work. So let me share this little story with you. You see, the state health department has a wastewater branch, and the wastewater branch, under it, basically, within the health department, is a board that regulates and oversees the operators in the sewage treatment plants. And it's required that you have a license, just like you would a CDL driving a bus for, you know, safety and all of that. You would need a license and to demonstrate that you have the aptitude to operate these massive sewage treatment plants to prevent spills and protect the environment. So you're not just sitting there, Johnny, will you want to do some work tonight? And these are supposedly skilled people. So I'm learning, as I've reported of many times over the years, that many of the operators at these plants do not have their certification, or some were actually operating on a temporary license or certification with an expiration date. And some of those had expired and had not obtained the necessary permit or application or certification. So the state health department on this board now, that it's pretty much overseas and they have an attorney general there, this board does not have, it's compiled of city workers and state workers and others, but there's nobody in the state that serves on that board. So how can the city come into compliance when the state is on the board that advises this process and oversees the certification, yet the state has not named, as I've been informed just recently by the state itself, that they have no one to serve on the board, didn't bother to appoint anybody. Gary Gill and Neil Abercrombie or whoever is responsible didn't appoint anybody or designate anyone. So I inquire about the licenses, and under the UIPA, Uniform Information Practices Act, I requested these documents, and I want to see a list of all the licensed people and all the operators at the plant. So I called down and finally found who would provide that information. Oh, yeah, I have it right here, and I can get it to you. Where do I send it? Okay, I give him my email, I wait around. I didn't get anything. Well, I think initially, I've said many times, most of the government employees are honest people. I'd say 99.9% of them are honest. The other half or 1.1% is just doing what they need to do to get a job or to satisfy their boss so they don't get fired or harassed. But this young man decided, I'll get them to you. Well, I didn't get anything, and so I call around, and finally the name Carol Cox pops up, and when Carol Cox calls asking for something, you call all the way to the top and then back down to the bottom, and the bottom line is delay, delay, delay. Don't give him anything. So finally I contact him on that evening and says, where's my documents? Oh, you need to file a request, a formal request. No problem. You can fax it to us. Well, can I email it? No, just fax it to us. Okay. Send me the fax number. I get an email late that evening. No fax number. So I took it upon myself to email it because it didn't have a fax number, and I called the next day, which was a Friday. Oh, he's not in. Well, can you check it? It's a formal letter. It's government business. Well, no, that's his private email. Yeah, but it's his private, but it's a state address. Well, we can't check it. So that was Friday. Saturday goes by, Sunday goes by, and I told him I wanted to have it for the show today. Well, Monday comes, and I call up and says, oh, I didn't get your email. Well, can I send it to you again? I immediately sent it, just hit forward where I had sent it already, and sure enough, he got it that time. So they have a system down there, a computer system, that's kind of iffy and temperamental, apparently. And it only works and remember what it, kind of like me, remember what it wants to remember. But anyway, so that was Thursday. That's almost 4 or 5 days. And you would think it's just a list that he had right there. He's looking at it as he described. And so I get an email back. Well, I'm going to forward it on now, and we have 10 days to respond. You see, the mayor talked about transparency. The state talks about transparency. But when you want to get the facts and you want to get elements of the truth to deduce and make a deduction your own and arrive at your own conclusion based on fact and information, guess what? There's a delay. So they only tell you what they want you to know, when they want you to know it, and how they want you to know it. So I believe that a great portion of our problems we see environmentally stems from the lack of concern and sincerity on the part of the mayor, the governor, his appointees, the mayor's appointees. They're just there trying to stay in office and nothing to do with protecting the resources or protecting the environment. It's a big lie, and I've shown you the thousands and thousands of tons of cement being dumped and buried into the streams of a native habitat where the last remaining population of on the west side of the Hawaiian stilt and other endangered birds congregate. I've shown you over the years at Waipahu where the city crushes, smashes, and buries white goods, washes refrigerators, car parts, and batteries, and all, and propane tanks right there in the middle. So the government agencies that stand there and tell you this is what we're doing, and they have all these crazy programs, cute, and they print a post, opala.org, and all that's junk, folks. The meat and potato approach, the one with stamina, the real good management is lacking. There is none. That is why if you take a, just stand back and just refresh in your memory about the many sewage spills, the many issues with backup of waste on the streets, the effort to control the dumping and the, what is it called, the bulky item. All of that speaks to the inability of a man or an individual or individuals that promise to do your work for the people and wouldn't have a clue because they're busy trying to screw you. They're busy trying to stay ahead of the curve and stay in office and advance themselves to a higher office at the cost of the environment and at the cost of your well-being and the, and your family and your property. So there are some serious problems out there, for example, in Kalu, out there in the harbor where the sewage spilled. So when we talk about, I posted an article up on carolcox.com and EnviroWatch. It's called Toxic, and I sure would like to invite some of you to, or all of you, to read it if you get a chance. And I talk about the many examples of pollution and what is occurring and how it's occurring. Batteries, 20, 30, 40 batteries dumped along the coastline right at the shoreline. Could that kind of behavior, just dumped and just sitting there for months, leaking the acid, leaking the lead, leaking all the contaminants in batteries, buckets of paint, buckets of oil, can that be contributing and influencing the pH that might be impacting. I can't say it's causing the bleaching, but it sure isn't good for the environment. So if the temperature, as they claim now, and I kind of don't agree with that 100%, because I did a show back in August 7th, 2011, and talked about the person out there in Coconut Island who's now spearheading this discussion about warming of the oceans and killing the temperature, killing the coral, where she had violated her permit conditions by taking sick coral to the Northwest Hawaiian Island and transporting it. And we suspect that, and then she talked about it, then the whitening of the coral. This was back in 2011. So, and there was no mention of the heated water or the surface water. So I've been doing some snorkeling here recently and just trying to document it. It's somewhat frightening. I'm actually putting together a video so that you can see, get an idea. It's probably worse than you could ever see, and it's not just about whitening. It's about the degradation is so far gone in the near shore. Now, when you go in deeper water, you may find a little better habitat, but the state of state now. That is what's happening. And I'm also looking at the Hanauma Bay. That's going to be something I'll be talking about in the coming weeks as I go and look at that. And, I was there the other day on several occasions. And I got to tell you, I think if we take money out of the equation, we would probably be better off. But that's impossible, because that's what's driving most of the machinery in this state and most of the people in the mindset. You know, I look at the number of people in Hanauma Bay and that video that they show you when you go in. I don't know if many of you have actually seen that or witnessed or watched it. But it's wanting, it's begging for more, because it has no educational value. It talks about don't stand on the coral. Well, you go out there and guess what you see? You see people standing on the coral, you know, by the 10s and the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, and cigarette smoking and food. It does little to preserve. And I think when you look at the quality of water and the quality of the coral and how it's been, it has changed drastically. But they're making money at $7, I think, 50 cents for a non-citizen, and maybe a million or so people going there. That there's a lot of moolah. What's happening with that money? I see there's tons of security guards, and it creates jobs. But, folks, I'm telling you, when it comes to the actual protection of that, I think at the current rate, it'll be a cesspool in the next 10 years. That's just my opinion and my observations, because, you know, they tell you to talk about sunscreen. Why don't you not use sunscreen? But you're bringing thousands of people per day, and they're coming there and they're stepping, and then there are people urinating and what have you. Does that change the pH? So when we step back and look at it, the big picture, and you look at a million population, 1.2 million population in the state, and most of them are here in Honolulu, we got to change our ways. I don't mean from the political standpoint. I don't mean from being foul-mouthed or me attacking or calling into question the mayor or any of them. We need a change soon. You can't continue, and as I speak to you right now at Wahiwa, the sewage continues over the years, continues under all administrations to be dumped into the Kaukonohua stream. and also to be dumped in a flume, and being passed out through Wailua and Kalkonohua Road, and all of that, and dumping in the bay. Something have to give, folks. We can't keep telling ourselves we live in this pristine, beautiful place. It's irreplaceable. The native people did this, and when they came, and I'm sure, I would say, if you ask me to describe it, I'd say we live in a ghetto when it comes to it. And considering what it is that what we had, and what we're showcasing, and what we're inviting people to come, but as we invite more people, and as we are reckless in the treatment of our sewage, and we fail to make sure that the people are adequately trained, licensed, becomes a big problem. So 524-1080 is the number if you'd like to offer some of your insight or comments. But I'm not sounding the alarm or an alarmist. I'm saying to you from my eyes, and it's sad. It is really, really sad. And unless we do something, I believe that most people will end up going to just anywhere rather than save their money other than the sun. Hawaii won't have anything to offer. Absolutely nothing. Because the near shore, and I talked earlier about going to the parks. I had failed to mention that I met a couple people that were touring, and they wanted to dive. They had gone to Bahamas or somewhere, and they had done night diving, and they wanted to do some night diving, and they were chased off. Told, nope, park's closed. Now, you know, we talked earlier about a permit. Can they get a permit? So this is somewhat disheartening in that we pretend to care, we say we care, and we have the people in place to work and to care, but guess what? We don't care. What we care about is money. What we care about is we say, oh, well, we're going to go back to the Ahupua'a. Well, you might go back there, but what you're going to be doing is giving the people that will inherit that an empty bag. There won't be the manini. There won't be the surgeon fish. There won't be the uhu. There won't be the mu or any of that, because we're gradually poisoning them, contaminating them, and if there's anything left, it's going to be able to glow in the dark. You can't eat it, and it's just it's really, really bad. And again, managed by agencies that get millions from the federal government to add insult to injury, along with the taxpayers' general excise or general funds. Legislators handing money out hand over fist. But what are we getting in return? A failed policy, whether it was Lingle, Abercrombie, whether it was Cayetano, or anybody. A failed policy. We're basically digging ourselves a hole. And so everybody in Hawaii can pat themselves on the back and say, we have a PhD in hole digging because we dug a hell of a hole. And to get out of it, it's going to cost more money to change our ways than it was to just simply do the right way in the initial stages. And the amount of money that is thrown out there at these efforts. And what do we get in return? Nothing. A degraded environment. And it becomes a problem. And one of the other things that I did get an email last night from a resident at Hickam. And, you know, we talked several times about the chlordane in the soil and how these are the things that really didn't get in the big media. For some reason, it was ignored because Abercrombie and Dannenoy and Akaka, they brought business, and they brought homes, and they increased the building of homes in Hawaii and Actors Lindley's got the contract, and, you know. This subject escaped us all except for the listeners out there that listen to this show and myself. The chlordane, the dildrin, and aldrin, all aldrin, and all contaminants that are harmful to humans, insecticides and pesticides. But at Hickam Air Force Base in Kaneohe, we talked about it, the abuse of the, and the transport and the ignoring the need to address the presence of chlordane contaminated soil. And I, if you recall, those of you that have listened for a while, I told you about the environmental impacts and the environmental action levels. At one time at Hickam, just as an example, Hickam, the state health department was holding the developers' feet to the fire and saying that here are the action levels, the environmental action level. If the levels exceed this, you must do this, 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 and this to protect the interests of the public and the people that live at Hickam Base. And that was the order of the day. That was the rule that was set. Somehow, politically, someone intervened. I don't know if it was Gary Gill or if it was Abercrombie or whoever, but the HERE office under the Department of Health found it necessary and justified how it could, the levels could be increased and doubled them. So therefore, they were, let's say it was a 4, or the level was 4 action level. They just said, well, why don't we raise it to 14? So that way it exonerates you here. You don't have to do what we've told you for the last 5 years. And now we're going to let you change, and then it will give you a buffer so that we'll pad it so that if you discover it's unlikely you'll find anything 14. Well, guess what's happening? I'm just getting an email just yesterday, and the citizens there, the residents there at Hickam, are complaining about illnesses. And what I'm told is that the neurologists and some of the doctors there on the base and at Tripler refuse to test and decline tests for heavy metals or chlordane and what have you. So I don't know. There's no science to this. I'm going to communicate to you the contents of an email that I just recently got. On Facebook, there's a Facebook working group on Kaneohe Marine Base that's talking about the chlordane in the soil and the contaminants and the illnesses and the things that is threatening them. This email indicates that 4 women on the same street have all had unexplained miscarriages. Now, again, I can't tell you. I don't. This is just an email, so we won't hurry to conclusion. But I just want to say this is that attempt to say I told you so. There are 6 people that this party is reporting with myoclonic seizures on the base, and they believe it's a direct relationship. And they indicate to me that in conversation that the doctor refused on base to take a fatty tissue to sample for these materials, chemicals, because that's where they are mostly collected or congregated, in the fatty tissues. One child has an issue with blood. They don't know why, a blood disease or something. 2 children with cysts on their brain and behavioral issues. 1 with RLS, periodic limb movement disorder, iron issues, sensory peripheral neuropathy, and cat and dog with messed up with liver enzymes. 1 with bronchitis 6 times last year, 2 with asthma that they never had before. This is this is not a complete list of the issues from families that have come forward and messages. Message one of the admins, I am sure there are more. So, again, if you think we have it bad, imagine being in the military and your career depends on it, you being a good soldier, and you dare stand up and speak out and say that I believe that I'm sickened by the environmental impacts or the influences or the elements in the environment here. I believe that I'm sickened by the chlordane. I just discovered that there's a high levels of chlordane. I just discovered that there were specific precautions prescribed, and I just discovered that those prescriptions were ignored or were allowed to be ignored or were encouraged to be ignored by the developer on part of the state. So imagine being in that predicament, you being an officer, you being an enlisted, and you have a family, and this is your career. But if you dare speak out. So my question today is, where's Tulsi Gabbard? Where is Mazie Hirono? Where is Colleen Hanabusa? Why is it that these people can't pick up the phone and raise these issues? They tell us how wonderful they are and they care about the military people and their families. But why is it that the people that are being impacted have to find their way blindly and being fearful of losing their career or being ignored? Where are these legislators? Why isn't there an open door policy to protect the people? And then, why is there a mound, and you've heard me talk about this, a mound of contaminated dirt right there lying next to Nimitz Highway with grass growing on it, right near the homes where you and I breathe it as we pass by and what have you? Why is it there? Why is it leaching in the soil? Why are they sprinkling water to grow grass over the mound when the water saturates and percolates down the ground? Why? So this group of people over there at Hickam and at Kaneohe, my heart goes out to them because nothing like being unable to exercise your rights and ask for freedom against pollutions. You have a right to a clean environment, but I guess you being a soldier, there's a different condition. But then what about the soldier's family? And maybe this is all for naught. Maybe there is no real threat. But when you get these comments that my husband goes to the doctor, he's asking the neurologist to refer some doctor to do a fatty tissue sample to sample for chlordane or heavy metals or whatever contaminants, and they say no. One indicates that they go to their doctor and the doctor refused to even read the report that indicates, that clearly talks about the chemicals. And there's this representative who's running now, he's a candidate, Brian Jeremiah, who actually worked for Actus Lend-Lease and was fired. And I'm hoping that he, if he gets in, we had him on the show here interviewing, that he, as a legislator, and will be willing to spearhead some kind of study, because of, if there's anybody out there that knows anything, it would be Brian Jeremiah, because he was a manager in that level and, for reasons as he described, was let go without warning. So these kinds of things, what is this? Is this just chatter? No, I'm trying to convey to you, the listener, that there are bigger issues with many movable parts. At the end of the day, we get nothing, but we get saturated with, I'm the mayor, and I call this press conference to be transparent. I want you to know that my administration is transparent. I want you to know. Well, Mr. Mayor, what about all the other crap? Well, I don't want you to know that. Because if you really knew me, Kurt Caldwell, and my inability to do anything, you'd run me out of office. You'd come down here and lock the doors yourself. I believe Kirk in his mind at all times believe that he's maybe one step from being caught. with the underhanded behavior and its lack of inability to manage in totality. I don't mean in parts and pieces, but can we have such a degraded environment, and can we have so many problems on the one administration, or are they just coming to the surface now? So my concern is that there's problems with this, this whole thing called environmental management. We're going to see a continuous degrading of the environment, both on land, both in water. And I believe in 10 years, at the current pace, we're going to need to give serious consideration and an effort to ban all gill nets. No more leaving them in the water. And give consideration, too, because, you know, if it's a natural thing to throw net, but at some point the population of fish is going to decline, and every impact is going to have be noticeable in the cumulative amount. We're headed for disaster, folks. And I don't speak from a point of an environmentalist who is an alarmist. I'm telling you, based on what I have seen and what is available to me, and I make it my effort, that we can't get straight answers. And I'll give you another example. About, I'm going to say 7 years ago, maybe a little longer, I filed a complaint against Oceanic Institute. And as you go there on the beach, there's a little river. And for years, children would play in it, and I would interview the parents, and they would say, oh, yeah, my child would go home with rashes and get sick and fevers and just don't know, you know. But in kids that played right down the beach in a different area. So I investigated and found out that it was a discharge from the Oceanic Institute. They had tapped into a Department of Transportation culvert that would drain all the water, was designed to drain all the water off the roads, off the highway there. But Oceanic Institute had decided it would tap into that and was illegally dumping their effluent. And as a result, the state came in and confirmed my allegations and my claim and shut them down. Well, believe it or not, I guess they figure after a couple of years or something, there seems to be, and I'm still, I filed a formal complaint with the Clean Waters Branch and against Oceanic again to say that there's discharge coming out of that facility again of effluent water. And this water coming out is again that same stream. And again, there's children sitting there in it and playing. And so the kinds of chemicals and things that are used at the Oceanic Institute is of concern. So they're supposed to be dumping it all in an injection well. So again, what if this is true now, if they've gone back and decided to start pumping again, did they get a permit? Well, speaking to the State Clean Water Branch, there were no permits. So why would anyone decide to go back and start doing what they've been told wrong as an institution? Why would they do that? Do they know something that we all should know? So that is, I don't know. It hurts in one sense because I would rather see my tax dollars, you keep your tax dollars and I keep mine, and we don't get it squandered. But we're paying through our noses to get service and protection, and these kinds of things are developing constantly. So that's just part of it. But I told you in June 2007, I wrote an article in Hawaii Fishing News, and with their blessings, I reprinted it and posted it on carolcox.com and EnviroWatch. And basically, I call it, I title it DLNR and DOH, a toxic combination. And I talk about wastewater, and I show pictures of gill netters and the sewage flowing into Kalkonohua Stream, how the state leaves oil down on the harbors and piers just as a collection point. And we talk about quite a few things, the dumping of R2 water in the Kalkonohua Stream. Talk about Oceanic Institute and the sponges and the brittle stars that were you normally wouldn't find in these areas, but there were population explosions of these species, sponges and what have you, because the water, they need this detritus that was coming out of Oceanic Institute to feed on. And yet people's children were playing in it and never knew. So a reality, and anyway, I invite you to go there, and you can see we got pictures of various dumps and from different islands and where we've gone. And we need to do something. And, you know, what is the answer to this madness? I don't really know, but it's we better do something real quick. But I'm going to take a break for a minute and clear my throat, and I'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. I had to take a break there for a minute. And anyway, talking on another subject. Last week I told you about the Department of Education and its contract with Jacobs. And I'm still in pursuit of this subject because there are some crazy things happening with the DOH, the Department of Education. And I'm trying to track down, supposedly one of the top officials was, I guess, quit or let go. I'm told by it's a superintendent level. But there are some issues with the contracts that was issued to Jacobs and Jacob. I haven't gotten any update as far as what DOE is going to do about this, but I've shared it with other media now, and I'm hoping that from all corners, all points of the globe, questions will come at them. And I believe that the millions that are being squandered at DOE, we will find an answer right here in these documents. Just a little footnote. I was told in some of the interviews I've conducted is that they were told the people that were making assessments, I'm hearing this third hand, but I have some information that confirms some of it, but not in conversation, but was that they're supposed to be doing
ADA.
Compliance as well when reviewing these facilities, these schools. And they were told to just ignore the ADA. In fact, the packets would come with an ADA form, and they were told to just tear that form off. And in the new records, the request to, in the work order and what have you, they're told to stay away from ADA. Just don't worry about it. It's called the ADA assessment. And just, I have one of their forms here that these teams would receive, I'm told. And basically, they would say ADA 45, entirely remodel restroom or door width. They would look at things like this. Toilets stall, has wheelchair access, restroom grab rails are installed and tubular. And you don't think about this. I was taken aback by with the things that are being revealed in here. And that is, you know, putting a tubular rail opposed to a square one makes a difference to the person that is handicapped and the gripping. I wasn't aware of that. But it's things like that, and I was told that many of these facilities or schools or the buildings that did have rails had inappropriate railing. Something right down to that. And they won't change that. They just said, take the ADA assessment forms and discard them. Don't use them. Path of travel, stairs, ADA, stair handrails are installed and tubular. And they would say, you get to ask yes or no. And then they would say, ask you if you would do handrail and replace or repair. Now, they were told to just give everything a 25% life expectancy, each item. But if they're illegal and does not comply with ADA and they're told to ignore ADA, how can they lie and say everything has a 25% life cycle, remaining life in these components, rails or whatever? And they were looking at things like the ramp slope is reasonable. They were talking about the width or full replacement. Again, these are real critical things that the state DOE ordered its people, the contractors, to stop. Do not look at this. Special access areas. Is access provided to the cafeteria, gym, locker rooms, stage, library, media center, band, choir, auditorium? ADA 50 is a platform lift install. Are accessible ramps installed? Is doorway access system approximately 3 feet wide? So imagine there's an entire list of things that they need to look at to address and comply with ADA, and they were told by DOE to just don't even bother to look at ADA issues. Is that justice? Is that right? And then they talk about the lift and ramp and doorway location at the gym and the library, etc. And then the deficiency. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Thank you for taking my call. Everything that you have said about the rails and the ramps, essentially, I use a lift and I am impaired. Everything you say is absolutely true. And if the state is violating that, they are violating ADA, and they should be investigated and held accountable by the federal government. And you are absolutely right. I go through it every day with rails, with ramps, with distances, etc. And thank you very much.
Well, let me ask you something there.
Yes.
While I got you. I was reading this bit about the rail, the circular and the square rails. That's critical, I was told, by the way a person can grip it. Which is the ideal one? I was it was came to a surprise to me. I hadn't even given thought to that.
No, well, I haven't come across a square one yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a big difference. I can give you an instance. Handyman driver year, 2 years ago, was telling me, and I said to him, you've never been asked about the specifications for the vehicles. And he, of course, we both agreed he hadn't. But on one of the vehicles, it's so worn that he had, whereby his hand would be damaged because he had to move it so vigorously because the rubber or whatever device they had on the ramp itself had been held out in the sun and had not been used, and now he had to operate the door with the hand, and it was neglected. And that was it. But you're absolutely right about ramps, lifts. If a van comes up to the sidewalk and that ramp can't go down, the van has to move to a certain place where the door, the ramp can be lowered to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that you've said is absolutely true. I have not read the documents, nor do I know anything about the documents you're referring to. But I can support you in terms of the absolutely essential implementation of that to help me and anybody with a disability.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I want to emphasize it's schools, the elementary and middle schools and high schools that are making. So we're talking about the welfare of the children.
Of course. And the other thing is, how high are the rails? How low are the rails?
Mm-hmm.
In what place are the rails placed? If your legs are impaired in any way and you do sit, how do you pull yourself back up?
Mm-hmm.
And it is so, so simple for me to understand. I have not been in the school, so I do not know. But if what you are reading is what they're doing, it's not a civil problem. It's a criminal problem.
Right. Well, anyway, this is. I thank you for calling in. And
sure.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
All righty. Well, one of these these documents, it's Jacobs estimate less than 15 schools remain to be sourced that are located on neighbor islands or unavailable. Jacobs has completed a preliminary CAD at 54 schools and estimates that about $236,954 of additional fee will be required to complete conversion of all 260 Hawaii DOE PDFs to schematic CAD files based on. So the reason I read that is just to show you a lot of things went into this, and then they just said, forget that. We want to go back and just give a life expectancy of 25%. So, folks, I can't give you all the details, and I'm just piecing things together here, and then I've gotten some more information, and I will be bringing a clearer picture. But if you get the chance in talking to your legislators or your city council or whomever you think, tell them to look into this. Call, try to get them to do an investigation on this DOE contract and the assessment of the quality of the buildings and the needs. That is important. And that was, it's just shameful. And we need to do something about it. But I don't know what all the answers are, but their financial information on that, the original contract value was $4,615,000 total value. Was a modification issued today, zero. Current contract value, $4,615,000. Project funds expended, $451,000. Project funds expended to date, $1,508,000. Project funds remaining, $3 million. But that was a report written in back in September 2014. So why would the state engage and allow all of this money and then pull the plug? So someone's playing some hanky-panky here. And I promise you, I'll bring you all the details soon. And maybe federal authorities might be looking because they need to answer where the money is. Okay, we'll see you next week. And take care and thanks for listening.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.